It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. A great, great day as a lot of things going on at Pirate Athletics. We have a men's basketball game later this afternoon at 2 o'clock at Williams Arena, Menzies Coliseum. Of course, softball today at 11:30. And then, of course, the third and final game against Radford has been moved up to noon today. So lots of great things happening on campus in Greenville at ECU. Very excited to be here. We got a huge show for you, folks. We're going to hear, we'll have the Memphis post-game stuff from Wednesday night. We'll be hearing from Coach Joe Dooley. Penny Hardaway, the Memphis coach, NBA legend. Of course, he played in Memphis back in the day. We'll hear from Kelly Hines as we preview the Tulsa Golden Wave. And let's see, Golden Hurricane. She's from the Tulsa World. She's the beat writer for football and basketball. We have C. Austin Cox for the AAC Daily Podcast. Gary Gilmore, we caught up with him from Coastal Carolina, the baseball coach. They have a big weekend, of course, with the opening of college baseball. We wanted to have him. We'll have an ECU sports report from Bubba and so much more, so make sure that you stay with us. In fact, let's go now. Kyle, I want to get your thoughts on the weekend and how things have been for ECU.
Well, the baseball team started off right with two wins on Friday, taking two from Radford in the doubleheader. Game one was a bit of a tight game, left some guys on base, but we got the W. Game two was over with in the second inning with a big 10-run second. It was the first 10-run inning we had had in a while, in a few years, which is kind of hard to believe. But, you know, runs aren't scored as much as they used to be in college baseball back before they changed the bats. But it's good to start off 2-0 and see if we can get the brooms out and get the sweep on Sunday and take three from Radford. Also got a big basketball game coming up Sunday against the Tulsa Golden Hurricane and see if we can get back on the winning ways on the hardwood. Coach Dooley and then the boys, wish them luck Sunday. It'd be nice to have a 2-0 Sunday and winning baseball and winning basketball. Sunday night, join us right here. We're going to try to get it out Sunday night. We will definitely be recording it Sunday night. It may not get out until Monday, but Sports Objective Extra Innings. We will be recapping the weekend that was in college baseball. Hopefully we'll have some special guests joining us. And please check that out, and we hope y'all will enjoy it as we look back at the weekend that was and look ahead to the week that will be in East Carolina Pirate baseball.
Excellent weekend thus far for the Pirates, and hopefully we'll be able to post several more victories today. The most anticipated thing going on this weekend was, of course, the season-opening baseball series against the Radford Highlanders. The 11th-ranked Pirates were able to sweep that doubleheader on Friday afternoon and evening. ECU won game one 6-2 before prevailing 15-9 in the nightcap. And we'll talk about those opening day wins for Cliff Godwin's club a little bit later on during my ECU sports report. Plus, on Sunday night, you don't want to miss it, folks. We have our debut of Extra Innings, a weekly show by the Sports Objective, during which we'll be joined by Corey Glore, the play-by-play man on the Pirates Learfield IMG College Network, and also a surprise guest this week will be someone who is certainly no stranger to ECU baseball fans. We'll leave that up in the air right now. Tune in on Sunday to find out who that special Pirate is. Hopefully the Pirates today can complete their first sweep of the season. Of course, first pitch is against the Highlanders at noon. Watch that game live wherever you are on ecupirates.com, or you can listen live, hear Corey Glore and Coach O describe the action via the TuneIn app and going to the Pirate IMG network.
Well, the Pirates fell short on Wednesday night, 79-69, as Memphis really came on strong, and a big night for them. Pirates had moments where it was down to like 1 point and very close, but unfortunately another loss for the Pirates, so very disappointing there as they're 9-15 on the year, 2-10 in the conference. By the way, Tulsa coming in, we'll be talking about that. They're 15-10 and 5-7. We'll be talking more about that later. But let's go back to Wednesday night to give you an idea of what happened on Wednesday with Memphis. First, we're going to go to Memphis post-game. We'll go to the players first for Memphis, and they're at the podium right now.
We have Jeremiah Martin and Alex Lomax.
Jeremiah, nice to get the wet road with.
Yeah.
The struggles you've had.
Yeah.
good to get a win on the road, but I mean, it's a quick turnaround. We playing against a good team coming up Saturday, so I mean, we're gonna enjoy it on this trip. When we get back to Memphis, our focus is just strictly on Central Florida.
Jeremiah, you made two very important three pointers here late in the game, and I noticed after you hit the first one that went in the timeout, you went straight to Tyler and put your arm around him and grabbed him and said something. Do you remember what you told him, and were you sort of taking it upon yourself to try and will this team here at the end of the year?
I just told him because I know he gets aggressive sometimes, and but I like it though because he's a freshman. You know, I want him to play with that confidence. But like I had got onto him in the timeout, and I just told him, he's my little brother. We're gonna be in some tough battles, and you know, sometimes it's not gonna always come out how you want it to come out. But I love him and stuff like that. I just want him to be a good player because I know one day he gonna have to do the same thing to others. I do the same thing to Alo as well, though.
You guys have played East Carolina twice now. The first time they had an 11-point lead that you guys erased. This time they were up in the second half. You guys closed out the game on a big run. What is it about this ECU team that just kind of matches up well with you guys and kind of sticks around until the end?
They at home, so I mean they gonna feed off their crowd, but I feel like we came together as a team their last media timeout, and we kind of just pushed away. You know, we used everybody that we needed to, and I feel like everybody on the team was a help today. And that's how it's supposed to be every game, especially on the road. We're going to need everybody. That's why we say we're road warriors.
Jeremiah, do you remember losing here last year?
Yeah.
Can you remember that? I think this feels a lot better.
Yeah, no doubt. That's definitely been on my mind. I've been trying to get revenge, you know. From last year, we took that loss. We should have won because, I felt like we was the better team. But that's one thing I've been thinking about since last year. You know, when we had lost to them here, we should have won. And that's why I wouldn't. I told the team, like, all today, like, we can't lose. We're not losing today. That was our message. We can't lose today. And we did.
When you went behind and hit those big three.
Yeah.
How do you balance taking it upon yourself to will the victory and doing too much? You seem to pick the right moment.
Experience, you know. I've seen guards do it before, like when I was a freshman. So that's what I want them to do. I want them to see what I'm doing. So, you know, when I come back watching it on TV, they do the same thing. And I'd be happy. But just basically trying to win for the team, you know, in the city. You know, one thing Coach always preached to the team, and especially to me, Alo and Tyler, we got to do it for the city. We got a lot of people depending on us. So, you know, we got to go out extra hard. And that's what we do every day. We try to do it for the city.
Alex, what's it been like to have a guy like Jeremiah? How has he sort of helped you? And also, can you just break down how you played today?
Oh, yeah. It's great having a guy like Jeremiah on the team because he's a veteran in the game. Every day in practice, he's showing me new things. He's dominating everybody at practices, doing nice moves, nice passes. And you just got to be amazed by it. You can't even get upset sometimes because you know that he's a veteran and you just got to accept it. So I've accepted it, and I just look up to him, and I'm learning from him and seeing everything that he's doing and just trying to steal everything while I can because this is the only year I got with him. And today in the game, I just told myself I'm going to play hard as I can and play defense. That was my only goal today.
You're going in, I'm sure you knew that Jones wasn't going to play, Antoine wasn't going to play. Did you have any different mindset knowing that, or was it pretty much all the same?
I knew he wasn't going to play, but I still just had a mindset of just going out, playing hard as I can, play defense, and anything else that comes, I'll just be thankful for it, not wanting anything, not entitled to anything, just want to come out, play hard defense, and hopefully I can make some plays for my teammates. Those my only two goals. I made some shots today for a change, and that was just a bonus for the team, so I was just thankful for those opportunities.
Yeah, but were you surprised? I mean, I think you're not surprised when you hit those big threes in that moment. Is that what you've come to expect?
Yeah. Early on in the season, or early on, I was surprised. And then he's very consistent, so it gets to a point to where you just worry less about it because you know at some point Jeremiah's going to come through. He do it every day in practice. He's been doing it these past couple of games, and I'm just admiring and enjoying the process. These are moments I'll never forget. And like he said, hopefully my senior, I can do half as good as what he's doing now.
Alex, I imagine it felt good to hit that three at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, it felt great. It's been a rough shooting year for me. My teammates, they've been doing a good job of keeping my head on, just having confidence in me. It's a mental game with me. And after seeing it go down, it was just the preparation before I even got here, just being positive. And it just went in. Regardless if it went in or not, I just still would have kept a positive mindset. And that's what I'm keeping for the rest of the season, and just be positive. And like I said, not worry about those things. Just worry about defense and making plays. And like I said, if those come, I'll take it.
We have time for one more.
Did he tell you about losing here last year? Was he telling you?
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit. I do know he dominated that game, though. I watched the highlights. But this year he dominated this one with a W, so I know it feels better.
There were a couple times on the break where you were literally coming down the middle, seeing the floor, and then I guess you saw there was nobody in the lane because you went straight to the basket.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what that looked like? You just went right down the middle?
Coach Hardaway always, you know, preach and get on the guards about, like, you know, if no one in front of you, don't stop, or, you know, don't can't no one really stay in front of you, shouldn't. He say if you want to be a high-level basketball player, you know, one person can't guard you. So if one person can guard you, I mean, basketball going to be hard for you. And, like, I just didn't see no one, really, honestly. I knew somebody was right there a couple times, but I just got in my mindset, can't no one hold me.
Thank you.
Next up was the legend in Memphis. He's come back home as he played in Memphis and then went on to have an outstanding NBA career. I'm talking about Penny Hardaway. He's done a nice job as Memphis is looking to at least be, I would say, an NIT team this year. And they're doing a decent job, outstanding job recruiting. They've got an NBA staff on the coaching staff, so tremendous talent.
There,
our coaching staff.
We knew it was
going
to be tough because of what ECU did to us at our building. They were up 16 points, and we came back and won a tough game. Had to win it at the end to beat them in our building. So, especially coming off a game that we felt like they should have won at South Florida, that they just couldn't finish, and they were coming back with, you know, revenge on their minds from us, and Coach Dooley has these guys playing hard, so I knew they wasn't going to be easy. But to come in and win tonight when we needed to win was big for us.
Penny, what is it about this ECU team? The first time you mentioned it, they had an 11-point lead in the first half, then you guys come back and win. They had a late lead here. You guys go on a big run at the end of the game. What is it about ECU that gives you guys trouble for three-quarters of the game, and you can figure it out?
And, man, they're well-coached. You know, Coach Dooley does a great job, and then they have guys that just play with energy. And sometimes for us, our guys don't play with energy all the time. So if you don't match that energy, you know, they're going to go on runs. So, you know, for the most part, every time they ran out, we sustained and then and got back to where we were. But they're going to always give us problems because they play hard. Any team that plays hard, you're going to always be in the game.
Thoughts on Jeremiah's big threes? Obviously, they pick late. Jeremiah comes back.
Yeah, Jeremiah, from, you know, before the jump ball, I spoke to him and said, you have to put us on your back. You know, you have to lead us and let everybody else follow, and he did that all game, and those threes were huge.
Before the season, did you realize that Jeremiah is, you know, sort of this type of player, or has he surprised you at all?
No, he really hasn't surprised me. I think early on I was trying to get him more freedom by putting Alex and Tyler out there. Alex being a pure point guard and just trying to be a pass-first guy, Tyler being able to spread the floor, and that would have given Jeremiah more room to work. But then as the season got later, the freshmen weren't playing as well, put him back at the point guard, and it seemed like he went right back into a scoring mode because that's what he did last year. So maybe it's just he's more comfortable there scoring, but I thought he'd be more comfortable on the wing getting the ball and us trying to find him.
And then Alex talked about the importance of having him and what he has sort of meant to him and Tyler and even Antoine as freshman guards and bringing them along. What sort of leader have you seen him be?
Yeah, he's definitely leading those guys because he has to help them understand that it's not easy, that you have to bring your A game every night. You don't have to score. You just have to bring energy every night. I think with the freshmen, when they first came in, they had high hopes of just being first-team all-conference. They had these crazy ideas of just coming in, and it was all most individual because as a freshman, you want to do well in your first year. Jeremiah's kind of helped calm them down and say, hey, you know, you got to crawl before you walk. You just bring energy in and let everything else kind of fall to where it's going to fall.
Keevan
just wasn't into it today. It had nothing to do with the injury. It just is what it is. I mean, we need him. He just wasn't engaged today, and You know, we just got to – hopefully he'll be ready for next game. Last game he was terrific against UConn, and then he came in today and couldn't get a rhythm, played 16 minutes, no rebounds, and he's our leading rebounder. So he just wasn't – he wasn't as much engaged today. Antoine is plantar fasciitis. It's starting to bother him, and we know it's a day-to-day thing.
Earlier this week you said Jeremiah, you called him the best player in the conference. I'm assuming this type of performance backs your claim up.
Yeah, I wasn't really trying to disrespect anyone else, but Jeremiah averaged 19 a game last year, and we could have allowed him to be a 25-point scorer this year if he really wanted to be. I think he's just been so unselfish this year, but when he has to put it on, like pour it on like now, having 41 and a half, no one's done that this year. 41 points in 20 minutes, and then 31 today. So, I mean, you can arguably say that he's the best player in our conference.
You get 56% shooting tonight, 25 times on the free throw line. Talk about the efficient nature of your team's offense tonight.
Yeah, we don't usually have those great days in shooting. Tonight was the night. The guys felt good about themselves last night when we came in and went through our shoot around, and it led over to today. In the pregame, the guys made a lot of shots. So you can just kind of tell they were in a great rhythm, and then it just carried over to the game. As far as the free throws, we have to be very aggressive. We do. We have to get to the free throw line. We only shot 8 free throws in our building against Cincinnati and lost the game. So we know for us to win, we're going to have to win the free throw game.
You obviously weren't here last year, but it bothered Jeremiah. Like, he wanted revenge. Was that? Did you know that?
He and Sean, they have this little thing going. Sean was talking a little smack to him in Memphis, and I'm sure he remembered that. And he knew that Sean was going to try to come out, and he knew that he had to lead us. But I do know about the game last year when Sean had a really good game against him either in Memphis or here. I don't know which game it was, but Jeremiah was definitely looking forward to this game.
And Kareem wasn't particularly engaged early, but he got those big buckets late. We posted him up. What was the thing of that?
Yeah, I have to do a better job of getting Kareem into those situations. And I think sometimes he gets a little frustrated because he wants the ball to do those things. And then late, you know, we can't just ride Jeremiah. We know that Kareem has the ability because he's a senior, and we went to him, and he scored some big buckets for us.
Penny, 2 meetings this season. What has impressed you most about this ECU team? Obviously, the wins aren't there for this Pirate squad, but for you as a coach, what have you seen from this ECU?
You know what? You know what I love about this team is that a team that's lost 8 out of 9, now 9 out of 10, and lost a lot of games in a row, they'll be in the warm-ups just really just going through the motions. I saw Jaden Gardner out there before the game, before we were even on the floor, going as hard as he could, working on his game. I saw the other guys come out. It wasn't a lot of talking. They went right into their work. At least you know that they have great leadership. And it's the same thing when they came to our building after they beat Cincinnati. They have a workmanlike attitude. Even though they're not as deep as they want to be right now, Coach Dooley's doing a good job of keeping these guys focused on what they need to focus on and playing their hearts out. So that's what I really love about this team. He's going to build a great program here because he's competitive enough and the guys are listening to him.
Before you pulled away at the end, was it the offensive rebounds, turnovers? I mean, what enabled them to get taken away?
I mean, they were at home, and then they just, you know, teams at home are going to make those type of runs. And you got to understand that Jaden Gardner is a handful, and Seth Lede is a handful. That guy, those two guys are a handful for anybody to box out, and they were the ones that were grabbing those rebounds. They're very athletic. Lede is very athletic, as athletic as anybody in our league, and Jaden is just a bull. So, I mean, those guys just kind of imposed their will on those plays.
You avoid the bad start that you had the last 3 games. Does this feel like sort of a building block road win for the rest of the year?
Yes, it does, because we really just honestly did what we've been taught. When we've been watching film, we just haven't been as solid defensively in the fundamentals of what we believe in. We got guys hugging on their man when they're supposed to be in weak side help. We're not talking and communicating, which makes us slower. And we're not tagging the roll guy on the pick and roll, you know, to keep us engaged. So when you start seeing that's not what we're taught, and that's why we went on a losing streak, because we weren't doing those things. So we change that, we'll give ourselves a better chance.
Got time for one more.
Coach, Jaden's had a great freshman year, and you guys really held him in check tonight. Was that a game plan before the game, or just how the game flowed?
No, that's the game plan against him. I mean, we knew that. He's a handful. You have to match his energy, and you have to make him take jump shots, because he's going to come at you hard. We wanted to take charges on him when he came at us hard and knew we had to box him out. But basically, that was the game plan against him. Rainier Thornton did a great job on him tonight in a total team effort. But Ray kind of frustrated him a little bit because I know he wanted to get off. But, you know, Jaden is a fantastic player. The future is definitely bright here.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
There were no players for ECU available, as the Memphis players and Coach Hardaway went long. So there were no players. Want to let you know we did not leave them out. They just were not able to talk to the media. But we did have, finally, for the Memphis postgame, Coach Joe Dooley And let's go to him as he's going to the podium right now.
Obviously, I mean, I thought we did some good things enough to keep ourselves in position to win the game. And I thought that obviously one of the big differences, you got a guy like Martin who jumps up and makes plays and provides what seniors should do. He makes, you know, makes a lot of big plays at the end of the game. And, that's hopefully where we'll evolve to here in the future with older guys making plays and teaching younger guys how to play through some stuff. But I did think our guys competed. We were better not turning it over. Did a better job on the backboard and just couldn't get enough timely stops.
That's not your Isaac for most of the game. How much did that kind of impact?
I mean, that he's, you know, your best perimeter defender. That's who was guarding Martin. That's one thing. But the second part of it is, you know, we don't have a lot of downhill drivers offensively when he's out of the game. So it tilts your offense a little bit because he doesn't, you know, he can get to the rim. He puts pressure on the defense to get downhill. And so it's a little bit. But I thought the other guys, I mean, we didn't turn it over. Some of the other guys had to play more minutes. Obviously, guys like Tyler Foster had to play more minutes, played 33 minutes today. And, you know, KJ put out of foul trouble in the first half. And, Wade and Hardy got some more minutes. But it doesn't help. But, you know, I don't know who would have stopped Martin on some of those shots.
How frustrating is it to be so close there at the end and have Memphis pull away? It just seemed like down that stretch you guys couldn't find anybody to get the ball.
They did a good job defensively on, you know, we tried to force. We had a couple untimely turnovers. We had one or two where we were wide open. And then, you know, I asked our guys, and, you know, of the 20, you know, we shot 23s, how many of them are open? Their number was 15. I don't know, is that the right number or not, but we had a bunch of open shots that you got to jump up and make some open shots. You know, they jump up and make shots and mid-range shots, and we've got to get better at that.
What makes Jeremiah so difficult to match?
I think he plays with a lot of confidence. I think that he can get a shot, and he can make tough shots. You know, those older guys, he's an older guy that can. He knows what he's doing. He knows where he's going. He knows the pace of the game, and then he can make a tough shot, and he makes it look easy.
So you can hear the tone in your voice, obviously, another stinging defeat. Just what are you thinking right now?
You don't want to know what I'm thinking. I'm joking. It's frustrating. You know, everybody says, well, it's a building process. Well, we're over there. It's not any fun. And I do think, you know, we worried, you know, I was worried last week that we were a little worn out, and I think the guys have shown some resiliency and some toughness, and, I haven't had to get on about effort. We don't always play unbelievably smart, but I don't think we're not playing hard. I think we're playing hard and trying to win the game.
Penny, I asked Penny what he likes about your program. He has the utmost confidence in you bringing a winning program to ECU. When you hear a coach from the opposing sideline say that about this program, does that give you any solace?
No, until you win, it doesn't give you any. I mean, we're gonna get this thing figured out. It's gonna take some time. I don't know how long, but we're recruiting guys that are high level guys. We just got to get a couple of them, and we got to develop the guys in the program. And then when we get guys, we got to retain them and develop them. We're not gonna be able to get McDonald's All Americans. We're gonna get guys that can develop and become really good players and be a part of getting this thing up. And the other thing is, we got to get to the point where we have upperclassmen. And we've got. You know, they started five seniors. We've got one. You know, I don't. You know, Justice and Addison are seniors, but you know, that have played a lot of minutes, and we need to get to the point where we've got retention and development.
It was 61-60. Jaden missed a
free throw. Rebound.
It seemed like that was the energy push, and then Memphis ends the game on a 19-8 run. What happened that last?
We didn't get some stops. I thought that at the end they did a nice job of throwing the ball, to the short corner for a post up. And I thought we got a little spread out defensively. We weren't bluffing at the ball. We didn't shorten the court. We had a turnover. We had KJ wide open in the corner. We threw the ball away. I thought that was a big play. We had a couple shots at the rim, and we didn't finish with it. And I think part of that is some of that's maturity and getting a little bit older, and these guys getting some minutes to figure it out.
Carter got off to a really slow start in the ball game with 4 points in the first half, and seemed to come on a little bit in the second half. What was the strategy with him a little bit? He seemed to find himself in no man's land for much of the night.
Well, I think he had a couple where he got caught. I mean, the one where he got caught on the charge early in the first half. You know, he had a wide open, probably 8 or 10 foot shot, and tried to get closer and ran him over. And I just think finding some openings, and we can continue to talk about the biggest problem is if you don't make shots from the perimeter, the paint gets a lot tighter, and usually you're bluffing and getting back to a three-point shooter. They're running at the ball. They're almost hoping we throw the ball to guys that are on the line. And I thought he had the effort on the free throw and a couple other plays. He made some good plays, and he's a freshman. I mean, we acted like it was going to be all perfect the whole year. He's going to have some rough nights like he did in stretches tonight.
How is Isaac physically? Is he a possibility for Sunday?
I have no idea at this point. We'll get with Doc and get with Nate, and that's one of those deals they don't evaluate right away. They've got to do all the testing.
You mentioned you're not going to get on Balance All Americans. Jeremiah wasn't one. He wasn't that highly
recruited. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's sort of the model of what you, that kind of.
You know what? Like, we talk in recruiting all the time. Somebody's got to be our Paul George, our Kawhi Leonard. Someone's got to be that guy. And we're in a big boy league, and you're looking, and we've been trying to sell the fact. To tell you the truth, we've tried to sell what Penny's doing at Memphis. You can play against the number one recruit in the country. If you're a good player, you want to be seen. When we play Memphis twice next year, there's going to be 30 NBA scouts. So that's an opportunity for you to be seen also. And I think that's something that we try to emphasize. And it's a great league. You look at the number of guys from our league in the NBA, and there'll be more in the future. But the developmental guy like that, yes.
With Isaac, is it concussion related?
We don't know yet. I mean, I still have to do all the testing.
Take one more question.
I might be in concussion testing here soon. See you guys. Thanks, guys.
Now that we have the recap done, as far as a post game for Memphis, we'll give you a little bit of a Tulsa preview. And don't forget, we're going to have Kelly Hines from the Tulsa World to give you the Golden Hurricane perspective. But first, we're going to give you some basketball notes for the from the last game and giving you an idea to set the stage for today. ECU closes a two-game homestand this afternoon at 2 o'clock against Tulsa. The first of two games between the teams over the next 3 weeks. The Pirates will travel to Tulsa on March the 3rd. We'll be talking to Kelly about that. The crazy schedule for Tulsa, it's not too fair. The scheduling gods were not too kind this year for Tulsa. The Pirates suffered their fourth consecutive loss Wednesday night, falling to Memphis 79-69. Junior Seth Lede, he posted his second double-double of the year against the Tigers and the fourth overall with a team-high 15 points and 10 rebounds. Sean Williams had 14, Jaden Gardner 13, K.J. Davis 10, Tyler Foster 10, also scored double figures. It was just the third time overall and the second time against Memphis this season that the Pirates scored double figures. In fact, five of them did. ECU also had five players to score double figures earlier this year against Lamar. How about Jaden Gardner? He ranks among the top 10 in the American in scoring, fifth, rebounding second, and field goal percentage ninth. Gardner is the only player in the conference who actually to be ranked in the top 10 in both scoring and rebounding. He's one of four players in the league to be in the top 10 in rebounding and field goal percentage. Lede's 15 points Wednesday night was the most since his scoring 18 against Appalachian State on November 30th, and it's the fifth double-double scoring performance in an American Athletic Conference game. By the way, very happy for Sean Williams as he's improved his three-point shooting percentage over the last few games. In fact, he's at 44.4%, 8 of 18 from beyond the three-point arc in the last four games against UConn, Wichita State, USF, and Memphis. And after he was really bad for a few games there, 5 of 28 for the previous four games, Temple at Houston, USF, and Tulane. How about Foster? He posted double-digit points for the first time in more than a month Wednesday night with 10 points. It was his first double-figure scoring game since the conference opener at SMU on January 2nd. Foster, being the freshman, scored double figures in four games this season. He scored eight or more points in three of the last four games, eight at UConn, five at Wichita State, eight at USF, and 10 on Wednesday night against Memphis. How about Isaac Fleming? We've talked about him being a real important part of the offense. He's become more of an offensive contributor, scoring double figures in six of the last 10 games after scoring double figures only three times in ECU's first 14 games of the season. And he played just 6 minutes against Memphis, suffering an injury midway through the first half. So we hope that Isaac is okay. And, of course, being his senior season, we want him to get as many minutes as possible and appreciate all that he's done for the program. Davis, K.J. Davis, has made 11 out of 31. That's 35.4%. For his 3-point attempts over the last five games after going 12 of 42 in the first seven conference contests of the season. He has scored double figures in three out of the last four games. He's getting hot, And, of course, Isaac, before he was getting hurt, was definitely getting hot. He might have a concussion. We don't know yet. So they're trying to find out. We'll find out and pass along as soon as we know something. The Pirates have committed fewer turnovers than their opponents in the last five straight games, and six out of the last seven. ECU had more turnovers than their opponents in their nine out of their first 17 games. One of the things that was the Achilles heel that we desperately needed to prove, and Dooley and the coaching staff have done a nice job of definitely helping them out on that one. So, and don't forget, us, of course, for television, you can actually see it on ESPN3. They actually have Evan Leffler, who does play-by-play, and our good friend Nate Ross. He is on TV radio-wise, of course, the legendary voice of the Pirates. Jeff Charles, a good friend of ours. Cy Seymour, as well, for the Pirates, will be on the radio call from Learfield IMG College, and that'll be 2 o'clock. Will be the first tip for basketball. That'll be 1:30 for the pregame show for basketball. So it should be an action filled. If you want to watch television, you have radio and a lot of great coverage. And that's our basketball notes as we get you ready for Tulsa this afternoon.
The Pirates will be looking to snap a four-game skid as they host the Golden Hurricane of Tulsa. 2 p.m. tip-off this afternoon at Williams Arena Menchie's Coliseum in a game that will be broadcast on the ESPN3 platform. And now to take a look at the Tulsa Golden Hurricane, we're joined by their basketball beat writer from the Tulsa World, Kelly Hines.
Yeah, we're excited to have with us Kelly Hines from the Tulsa World. She covers Tulsa football and, of course, Tulsa men's basketball. Kelly, welcome into the show.
Hey, Kelly.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you back. You helped us out again back in the summertime for the American Preview for Tulsa, and we want to have you on. I know now it's hard to believe this is the first time we've seen Tulsa this year.
Yeah, Tulsa kind of had a weird schedule in that played several teams twice during January, and now getting in to really the heart of the schedule now that it's really not far from the end. So a little bit different. There are quite a few teams, it seems like, that Tulsa hasn't played yet.
Can you kind of catch us up with the basketball season so far, what's been going on with Tulsa and Frank Gates and the staff? How is things going so far?
You know, the non-conference portion went really well for Tulsa. It got to 10 wins for the first time in, I think, 8 years. It's been a long time since they've had that kind of non-conference success, had home wins against Oklahoma State and Kansas State in the same week. And then once the calendar turned to January, it got kind of dicey there for a while. Like I said, Tulsa's schedule was a little different. You know, had to play Cincinnati twice and Houston twice in January. And those were all losses. So kind of got off to a rough start to conference play and, you know, really, I think just now getting to, you know, some games that I think that they can win. They haven't played really that bad. Not a good road team, pretty solid at home, but, you know, just have one win on the road in conference play, and that was at Tulane.
That's big time. It seems like with this conference, I guess it's because this shows how great the conference is, but it's a common theme I've noticed with covering the basketball team this year. We don't have a single win. We've had so many close calls on the road, but, yeah, we come up short, it seems like, a lot. Obviously, I think it's 0-10 on the road now?
Yeah, 0-10, 0-11, something like that.
So we're it's
quite
a common
a few
theme.
Teams. I think I looked at it the other day that the bottom seven teams, I think, in conference had two road wins or fewer. So, you know, and that when you include, you know, non-conference play, that's not really pretty. But, you know, there's several teams right there who, you know, just haven't been able to get it done on the road.
Yeah, along the lines of what you're saying, Kelly, I know when Wichita State came to town just a week or so ago, I saw the Shockers. That was their first road victory when they won in Menchie's that night.
Yeah, and that's a team that plays really well at home. You know, I think that's you look at several of those teams. I think Memphis is that same way. UConn, you know, plays better at home. Tulsa's certainly better at home. And then they just can't get it together on the road.
Kelly, in general, Tulsa's got a good basketball tradition. You guys used to do really well back in the WAC days and then the transition from Conference USA into the American.
What are the thoughts of folks down in Tulsa, the fan base, and people at the university on the American Athletic Conference overall?
You know, I think that the American is still not getting the sort of respect that I think it deserves. You know, I think with Tulsa fans, they think that there should be the same kind of success that, you know, there had been in previous conferences. And I just think that it's a lot tougher in the American with, you know, there are a lot of programs that have really good tradition. And, you know, I think that especially how Tulsa's been able to win at home, you know, fans think, well, why can't they do that on the road? Why can't they win games in the conference tournament? And I just don't think that, you know, maybe fans are as familiar with you know, some of the traditions of you know, the other programs. I just think that Tulsa is always going to be a program that's going to be, you know, perceived as middle of the pack or lower. And I think that until they really are able to prove that they can consistently perform, you know, near the top of the league, that's just how it's going to be. I just think that they have a lot to compete with, you know, being the smallest FBS school and, you know, just having certain academic challenges. You know, I just think that fans don't always realize how difficult it is to compete in this league.
Kelly, when you take a look at this year's roster and you have, I think it's with Daquan Jeffries, And also Horn, talk a little bit about those guys. Those are a couple of the Golden Hurricanes leaders, and then some other guys that Pirate fans need to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, Daquan is, you know, probably the most dangerous guy on a nightly basis. You know, he's a senior on the team. He's super quiet. He's trying to get, you know, more vocal, but time's kind of running out for that. Super athletic guy. He can do a lot. He's very good on defense. He's gotten a lot better as a perimeter shooter. He's definitely a guy who can go off at any time. And Dryah Horn is, you know, I think he could be the sixth man of the year in the conference. He's one of the first guys off the bench. He's now leading the team in scoring during conference play. He had 20 points and 12 rebounds at Tulane. And four steals. He's just a guy who, you know, is a little bit streaky like shooters are, but he's kind of an X factor as of late. You know, he transferred from Nebraska, sat out last year, and, you know, I think that he's come on strong, and, you know, I think the future's really bright for him. You know, Tulsa's kind of a smaller team. They don't have a lot of inside size, but Martin Zigbanu is a guy who can be a matchup challenge. Depending on who he's going up against, you know, he's 6'8", but he's got a, you know, good size frame on him. And he's able to take over games depending on his matchup. So those are the three big guys to keep an eye out for. And then, you know, there are a lot of guards who are, you know, up and down. Curran Scott is one who has probably been the most consistent in terms of shooting. You know, it just, the list goes on from there. Darian Jackson is a guy you'll probably be on the lookout for. He comes off the bench. He's played well lately. He's very fast guard, very good on defense, but he has speed and transition that's been a problem for some teams.
Kelly, I want to change directions for just a minute. Then we'll get back to basketball. But were you surprised, or what were your thoughts when Tulsa made the decision to retain Coach Montgomery for another year?
Yeah, I really wasn't surprised just because, you know, the athletic director, Derek Gregg, had talked a lot about, you know, the fact that Tulsa was competitive in a lot of games they didn't win. You know, I think that that's something that they look at. And also just knowing the financial state of the university, it's pretty rough these days. So, you know, I don't think the university could really afford to buy out Montgomery and, you know, then you have to bring in somebody else, and that coach might have a buyout, you know, just not a great financial situation. So I think that, you know, it wasn't surprising that they were going to give him more time. I think next year is a very important year for him. You know, quarterback play has been pretty terrible the last couple of years, but there's a guy, you know, who sat out last year, Zach Smith, who transferred from Baylor, and that's kind of, you know, a lot is riding on how that goes. So, you know, the defense certainly improved a lot. And I think there were things that Philip could point to you know, that maybe gave him some more time. So, you know, I just think it sets the stage for what could be a really defining year for him. And it's a pretty difficult schedule that he has coming up with Michigan State, Oklahoma State, you know, just not some easy non-conference games. And obviously it's going to be tough every year in conference play. And, you know, they have UCF and Cincinnati on the schedule, and Eastern, obviously, but, you know, it's going to be tough next year. But, you know, I think you got to have some improvement for Phillip to be retained after that.
Yeah.
We got rid of our Montgomery, and you guys kept your Montgomery.
Yeah.
Kelly, shifting gears back to basketball, earlier Kyle alluded to the tradition of Tulsa basketball, what a proud program it is. It's hard to believe that Coach Frank Haith has been there, and this is his fifth season now. A lot of success in years one and two, and then I believe he had a losing season, and then won 19 games a year ago. This year you're 15-10, a couple games below 500 in the league, so the Golden Hurricanes really looking to finish strong in league play and hopefully position themselves to maybe get an NIT bid. Overall, is the fan base pretty happy with Coach Haith?
I would say overall, you know, probably not. You know, I think the one thing that Frank has, you know, going against him is he's the highest paid basketball coach in Tulsa history. So, you know, that's not his fault. That's just, you know, kind of the situation, how he wound up at Tulsa. You know, he was, they offered him a lot of money to take that job to leave Missouri to come here. So, you know, he's, I think, done a good job, but, you know, everybody looks at postseason and to, you know, not have made a postseason appearance even in the NIT the last 2 years. You know, I think that makes this year really important. You know, I think they have to go on a run, probably win one or two games in Memphis to get to that point. So, you know, that's a challenge that they've got to figure out, because, you know, there's only 1 year after this year left on Frank's contract. He's supposed to be getting an extension. It hasn't happened yet. You know, and I don't think you want to be going into the last year of your contract trying to recruit, and, you know, that's a lot of pressure. So I think that it just makes, you know, the rest of the season, you know, really important for him and for the program to try to, you know, get something going, because I think when you own a program like Tulsa, you're probably not going to be able to hire another coach like Frank Cage. You're probably going to have to, you know, hire someone who maybe hasn't been a head coach before, is an assistant somewhere. You never know how that's going to go, and it's almost like starting over to some extent. So, you know, I just think that Frank's got to make a run here like they did last year, and win some games in the conference tournament.
Yeah, hey,
Kelly, that's a good.
Go ahead, Dave. I'm sorry.
I was just going to quickly say, Kelly, whenever you have the fans and they're complaining, tell them you could always be East Carolina, where we only have two tournament appearances in the history of our school, and I don't think we've ever been to the NIT. So it's a good problem to have if you're upset that you're not making some kind of postseason tournament.
Yeah, you know how fans are, though.
Yeah.
They have their own reality and you know, views of how things should be. It doesn't matter how difficult it is to achieve anything. That's what they think should be happening. And like I said, you know, with Frank making, you know, $1.6 million, you know, they think, okay, that should translate into championships. You know, if you're going to make that kind of money here,
right.
You know, when it doesn't happen, that's when things start to go the other way. And, you know, like I said, he's won a lot of games at home, but there's so many things that fans point to that, as, you know, not having done enough to be retained. And so, you know, if they don't make the NIT this year, I think, you know, it may not be pretty.
How many years left on his contract?
1 year.
He has this year and next year. So his
contract 1 year after this year.
Yeah.
Okay.
His contract
is 2020. Yeah, time. There will definitely be a decision made. You'll either have to retain him and give him an extension or fire him. With 1 year left, you have to do one or the other. You can't leave a coach with 1 year left on the contract.
Yeah, and I think that he will get the extension. He basically paid back his retention bonus of $300,000 that he was supposed to get this year, because they told him he was going to get the extension, and then the extension hasn't happened yet. So I think that they're going to have to, or they might be sued over that. But it just hasn't happened yet. So it's pretty awkward. I do think it's going to happen probably after the season, but you know they're not going to be happy about doing that if there's no postseason appearance.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. In fact, you know, Coach Dooley, with coming back, he had done so well, and then he came back, and now the fans, or even some message boards, folks that are, and it's not a big percentage, a small percentage, are actually, one guy posted, Kelly, on our friend Steve and Igo's site on 24/7 Sports, Voice of Colors, is Dooley overwhelmed. You know, this is a guy that's been a winner everywhere he's gone, and honestly, he said at the press conference the other night, he knew that it was going to be a challenge this year. I don't think he knew how much of a challenge, but they were pretty much three players down going into this year, and it's been like we're like the epitome of the transfer problem and all of college basketball. We're like the poster child. I think a lot of guys over the years have done that because of the losing that's been going on. Yeah. But he's got to change the culture. I mean, it does take time, and they've been working really hard on the coaching staff. You can't get a better coaching staff than he put together. It's a rock star staff, and so we'll see how that plays out. But it's amazing how that we live in a Pop-Tart society where everything has to be like microwave, instantaneous. You have to win now. A Mike Krzyzewski at Duke, or there's many other examples, would never have the coaching job or legendary job that they have now because they would be fired after year two or three.
Oh, yeah. No, that's exactly right. I think that, that's just how things go. Fans don't want to be patient. And, you know, I think what is crazy about, you know, y'all's situation is there hasn't been that history of success. So to expect it, you know, when it hasn't been there before, to expect it overnight is just so unrealistic.
I don't think most of our fans do. It's
no, 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 no.
You got your lunatic fringe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now we have, and well, I guess it's a good problem to have, too. Another thing, Kelly, is that the officiating hasn't been great so far, yeah. But the great thing about it is when we were getting blown out, it didn't matter. The officiating didn't matter because you're going to lose the game by 12, 15, 20. It didn't matter. And now that the games are competitive, now you start to see, oh, my God, some of the calls have been atrocious. But, you know, it is what it is. I can say it because I'm not a coach and they can get, you know, they'll get fined, yeah. And I won't.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So what after East Carolina, what do you guys have coming up?
Wichita State comes to town on Wednesday. You know, that's a pretty good rivalry. The most common opponent in Tulsa history is Wichita State. They've played 130 times or something. So,
wow.
You know, and that was the game that really Tulsa had in hand up in Wichita a few weeks ago. Probably should have won. Tulsa tends to go through these, long droughts. Nothing is going right on offense, and Wichita State just kind of capitalized, and their fans really got into it. The game was pretty much over at that point. So that was a game that they should have won. This is a game, you know, coming up on Wednesday that Tulsa should win because it is at home. And that's actually a pretty good matchup for Tulsa. So, that's a pretty big one. I think there's
only like five more games, right? After something like that, after that game.
I know they still go to Temple.
What, Bubba?
I'm sorry. I was just saying, I think there's six league games left to play because Tulsa's 5-7 right now. So.
Yeah. So I think they still have, right. At Temple, at UConn, I know they go to Memphis. Tulsa really got screwed with its schedule. They play their last game of the regular season at Memphis and then turn around a few days later, go back to Memphis.
Oh, my God.
So, think that with Memphis hosting the conference tournament, like their last game of the regular season would be on the road. Didn't happen that way. So, Memphis is kind of a tricky trip for Tulsa because it's, you know, 6-hour drive. So sometimes they bus over. That's what they've done in the past. But I'm guessing they'll try to figure out how to fly there at least one of those trips so they don't have to make that drive twice in less than a week.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for your time, Kelly. Appreciate you very much. And hopefully we can all be talking about a whole bunch of American teams getting in the tournament, not only for the NCAA, but also for the NIT. That would be great for the league.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Excellent interview with Kelly Hines from the Tulsa World. Always enjoy catching up with her. She does a tremendous job covering both Tulsa men's basketball and football. Now we're going to be joined by someone who knows an awful lot about the American Athletic Conference, and that is C. Austin Cox. Austin runs the AAC Daily Podcast. He's based out of Cincinnati. And let's go to that interview with him right now.
We're very excited to have our next guest. We've been wanting him on for a few weeks now. Bubba, I'm glad our schedules could work out, and tell everybody who we have.
And so we have C. Austin Cox from the AAC Daily Podcast. He's someone, obviously, tremendous knowledge of all things American. So we want to talk the Big Three with him, talk TV deal, and a number of topics. Welcome into the show, C. Austin Cox.
Hey, Austin, how are you?
Hey, man. I'm doing great. So glad to be able to join you guys.
Absolutely. We wanted to have you on for a while now and want to find out your thoughts so far. What do you think? Let's talk currently about basketball going on. What do you think about conference play and how things are going so far?
Well, I'll tell you what, this has been a surprising season, guys. You know, obviously, I'm sure as you well know, UCF was picked to win the conference, and you had several teams losing a lot of talent and a lot of turnover. Wichita State going through a rebuild. Many expected Cincinnati to be rebuilding, but it's such a deep conference that I'm still, I think it's pretty safe to say that there's going to be a lot different look to those standings come the end of the season, because we don't have that many more games left to play, but it's such a deep conference. Anybody can win and can still see things get shaken up.
With the conference race shaping up, things here being in February, do you have a team that you feel like, I mean, is there, do you think it's going to be pretty much, looks like, Houston and everybody else?
Yeah, it feels like that sometimes, but, you know, as we saw earlier in the season, Temple was able to knock Houston back a little bit, and that's one of those confusing teams, that Temple, along with a lot of these schools, ECU under Joe Dooley is a great example of a school that, you know, you might think they're struggling, but they can come in and compete with you any given day. We saw that with Cincinnati. It's tough to say that everything's going to shake out the way it looks right now with Houston and then everybody else, but primarily because I don't want to say that Houston's going to get out of this unscathed. Besides that Temple loss, they still have to keep watching their back.
With the basketball, I've been telling people for a long time this basketball league in the American is way better than they get credit for, don't you think?
Oh, certainly. Right now, I would say the American, from top to bottom, ranks up there with the best conferences. Of course, you got leagues like the Big East, which probably doesn't get a lot of credit, even though they've won multiple national championships since this restructuring. But you see leagues like the ACC, and I'm sure you guys see it sitting there right in the backyard of all those other ACC schools. They get a lot of credit, but they're very top-heavy. Whereas, you know, as we've already touched on today, the American Fed Conference, it's deep. I mean, you got school Temples, USF doing a great job with Brian Gregory. Wichita State, even though they're rebuilding, you can never write off a Greg Marshall team. Even UConn with Dan Hurley and SMU, which is also struggling. These are teams that can play with just about anybody, and it's just hard here in the conference where they kind of cannibalize each other a little bit. But, boy, I got to tell you, this league, you're 100% right. It does not get enough credit.
Do you, you're up there in Cincinnati territory. You mentioned the ACC here and being in East Carolina's backyard, and they're in basketball season. Not so much during football season, but they're in basketball season. We get ACC to death, and certainly there's East Carolina football fans that decide they like ACC basketball. You know, Cincinnati's got a lot of tradition in basketball, but just around the city, do you guys get Big Ten to death up there, so to speak? Do Cincinnati fans follow UC basketball? But then not the American as a whole, they end up watching a lot of Big Ten ball or what?
I'll tell you what, the Cincinnati fans are pretty spoiled because they're sitting there in the greater Cincinnati area, which covers parts of Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana. So you got Ohio State fans, you got Indiana Hoosier fans, you got Kentucky Wildcat fans, you got Louisville Cardinal fans, and just 2 miles away from UC's campus, you have Xavier, which plays in the Big East. There's a wide variety of people. As a matter of fact, we have an up-and-coming school, NKU, which plays in the Horizon League. They're building this little fan base. It's good that you don't see, let me put it like, you don't see Ohio State shirts on UC's campus, but you see plenty of them around the city.
Okay. Well, that's good, honestly, that you do have so many conferences actually in that area. So you don't have one that kind of dominates over, you know, the others so much with coverage.
And I think that, and getting to that point, I think that one of the things that Joe Dooley has come in, and it's going to take time, is he has to, I know it's been used the word over and over at ad nauseum, but he has to build a culture. And he's always talked about since day one when he got the job April 4th last year that he has to put a winning product on the floor, and the fans have to come out and support the team. It's kind of like it goes hand in hand. But the way that you fix that is to build a program. They're working really hard with the great staff that they have at East Carolina to go out and recruit. And once you get those players in, I think they're a couple pieces away from really going from to really be competitive and start actually winning some games in the conference, and then maybe stealing some of the top tier teams in maybe the next year or two.
I think they're definitely doing the right thing. As you mentioned, Joe Dooley, he has to build that culture, and he's got the keystone in place with Jaden Gardner. What an amazing freshman you guys got there in Greenville. Of course, I think he's out of Wake Forest, actually. It's a great pickup, and he is just a cornerstone that I think Dooley's going to be able to build off of and build that culture, as you were talking about.
Yeah, and we have Seth Ledet. We've got a few nice pieces, and I think one of the problems we've had, Austin, at East Carolina, has been we're known for guards, but as far as really having a really solid, really a big man, we need a couple big men. Like it seems like every night when we're facing the center for a power forward position, the 4 or 5 position, if you will, we're giving up 3-4 inches every night.
Yeah, there's definitely a mismatch when you're talking about how ECU stacks up size-wise against, for the most part, the rest of the conference outside of maybe a Tulane. But, you know, it's one of those things, it takes time. And as we're seeing right now, the evidence and the precedent's been set. It can be done because you have what Brian Gregory is doing right now, changing the culture, rebuilding a program that was just in shambles after Orlando Antigua. And I believe that Joe Dooley is the right guy. Now they're on a second stint. I think this is going to be the right time and the right place for him to have that success.
Austin, who do you think should be watched out for in the conference tournament? Obviously, you got Houston and I would say Cincinnati. Actually, I guess would be your two primary front runners to win the conference tournament. And of course, Memphis hosted. But who else do you think could get a hot hand in the conference tournament? Team that I personally would watch out for just because of their tradition, and they're going to have to make a run to make the NCAA tournament. They're going to have to win the thing. Would be Wichita State.
Yeah, Wichita State was going to be my pick because they are going to have their backs up against the wall, and it's a situation that, of course, Greg Marshall teams are not used to. Coming over from the Missouri Valley Conference, they have their ticket punched every year for the most part. They really didn't have to have that kind of "we got to win to get in" kind of mentality. And he's got a young squad, and, you know, as I mentioned, he's rebuilding, but that would still be my pick to watch for a possible upset. You got maybe a Tulsa. It's going to be an interesting tournament for sure, especially in that great venue they got there in Memphis in the FedEx Forum. It should be a great one to attend.
Yeah. Switch gears. The television contract is coming up. I guess March is when that thing officially comes up for renewal. What are you hearing, Austin? Or what are your expectations for the television contract? Are you hearing anything? Any inside info?
Well, I'll tell you what. My expectations have been all over the board for about the past year, just leading up to this. We knew that negotiations were going to first come a little bit closer to being finalized in February. They had to wait for the exclusive window with ESPN to open up at 11 to at least talk to other parties. And unfortunately, right now, they are being about as tight-lipped as they can be. Of course, I mean, you guys follow what Michael Resgo is talking about and saying, and he's keeping everything pretty close to the vest right now. My hope, much like everybody else throughout the American Athletic Conference, fans, schools, administrators alike, is that we see something at minimum in the double digits per school. And based on what the conference has done, which is its entire job, to put out a good product that makes networks want to invest in it, it's done that. You know, we've seen the wins coming on the football field. We've seen the wins coming on the basketball court. we've seen the wins coming on the baseball field. BCU, a great example of a high-level, top-tier baseball program in this conference. And right now, the league's doing everything it can. And we're going to find out in probably about less than 3 weeks now if it's actually paid off, and it should.
Now, when you say minimum double digits in TV contract minimum, you mean meaning minimum $10 million per team?
Yes.
That's what you think the minimum would be, or is that just what you're hoping?
That is an optimistic hope. Let me clarify that real quick.
Yeah, I mean, that would be – well, here's my concern, Austin. I want to get your take on this, is that with all the and my generation being more of a Generation X, I'm almost 46. We're in the we love TV. We love cable television, all that. ESPN was born when we were, like, in kindergarten. So we've grown up with it. But there's a lot of guys now and ladies that – or millennials, for example, they're cutting the cord cutters, or people my age who can't afford. Just dealt with a satellite company yesterday, trying to reduce the cost of my bill keeps going up. And I'm at the point where if I were single, I would have cut the cord several years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, at least. And so my thing is, my point is will ESPN, for example, have the money of the old ESPN to be able to afford what we want? All of us want a multi-million, like a $10 million double digits thing, but will they be able to afford it?
Well, see, that is a little bit of the tricky situation that's going on right now, because, as you guys well know, the biggest competitor and most likely counterbidder on this whole thing was going to be Fox Sports. But over the last year, Disney has bought 21st Century Fox, which within that covers a whole bunch of different aspects of Fox's corporations, movies, TV, and all that. However, the sports aspect is separate. So it's still an entity that could bid. However, you're talking about a multi-level corporation that's restructuring and in no position to be able to bid, leaving us back to ESPN, and then your other potential suitors would be CBS or NBC. Really, ESPN does not have the money right now, because you bring up a great point about cord cutters. I myself am in the exact same boat. If I didn't have to have the large cable package, which is everyone we have for the kids, I wouldn't do it. But then you get that, and then, of course, as you mentioned, you got to do all the different subscriptions for CBS Sports or NBC Sports or CBSSN, all the different channels that you can be able to watch these games, and it takes a big hit on a lot of people's wallets. Now, as for the American going in this one, expect at least some aspect of the league to be going to a digital platform, a streaming medium like your Amazon, or potentially, and this is one that I haven't heard much about. However, I have heard the name mentioned in a few different instances, in Netflix and Hulu, which are both looking at sports. But right now, for them to reach the amount and get the value or get the amount that the league is worth, they're going to have to go with at least a partial streaming plan for Tier 2 and Tier 3.
Bill of Rights, I think to get to that $10 million or more, I think we're going to have to sign a grant of rights agreement. The schools that I think maybe hold that up would be UCF, Houston, and Cincinnati. What do you hear? Do you think, you know, you're in Cincinnati? If the money's right, if it's $10 million or more, but the caveat is we have to sign a grant of rights agreement, do you think those three schools, Cincinnati, Houston, UCF, would agree to do it?
I tell you what, I know there is a little bit of concern with some of the schools, and it was an idea that was getting kicked around. I talked to Michael Resgo about a month and a half ago about that. And, of course, as I mentioned, he keeps everything close to the vest. So he tried to imply that it wasn't something they were really talking about in depth. It was just getting kicked around. But it is something that the league and all its members have looked at. Surprisingly, and this is the most surprising thing to me, the biggest linchpin in this whole thing could be UConn wanting to sign the grant of rights, which is the biggest surprise, and that there's a whole other culture thing with UConn that doesn't mesh well with everybody else. But if they were able to get right on there,
UConn,
and I think they should.
To me, UConn is got a decision to make. They either need to drop the FCS in football and go play basketball with their Big East friends, or if the grant of rights comes up, they need to sign it, because the money, even going to the Big East, they're never going to amount, they would never right. match that amount of money in terms of television revenue that they would if we could get $10 million or more. The Big East television contract is on par with what ours is right now, and it's never going to get so big because they don't have football. So UConn's going to have to decide what they want to do. UConn's got to make the decision, do they want to play FBS football, or do they want to go play with the Catholic schools in the Big East?
You hit the nail on the head. That's something that they have to make that decision on. And unfortunately for UConn, they've put themselves into such a deficit financially with firing two coaches that they gave ridiculous contracts to begin with in football and basketball. So they had to pay them off, then bring in new regimes. There's just so many problems right now with UConn, but if they can get their head on straight and they were to focus correctly on football, which I think is what they need to do, they would be great. But it feels like sometimes with UConn, it's left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing.
Yeah.
Austin.
Go ahead, Bob.
Austin, speaking of ridiculous financial commitments that UConn's made, were you aware, did you see where I think it is Randy Edsall getting some type of bonus because of the Huskies winning a statistical battle in a game?
Yeah, Randy Edsall does have one of the most inventive contracts ever seen by an FBS coach. His agent must be a magician, because the guy gets like $2,000 if they have the first one to score, if they get this or that, if somebody brings bologna in their lunch pail. It's ridiculous what they're able to give him bonuses for. And if I was a UConn fan, I would be very upset with what he's getting and what he's giving them.
I know, I agree. And as far as UConn football goes, I have an idea for UConn and what they should do. If they want to spend money like that, if they can afford it, and if he would leave, and if not, I'd go with somebody from that vein. I'd go after Coach Munkin at Army. And if he wouldn't come, I'd go after somebody else in that vein, and I'd run the wishbone. I think in this current climate, I think that's the only way UConn is going to be able to be successful without being in a Power 5 conference playing FBS football.
They definitely need to make a change, and I'd like to see something like that from a UConn offense.
Baseball starts this weekend. The Pirates are the favorites. We're all East Carolina guys here, all three of us. So we're excited. We're ranked number 11 in the country, picked to win the conference. We got Omaha on our brains. What's the rest of the conference looking like, Austin? Who else behind East Carolina is going to compete for the American Athletic Conference Championship and make the NCAA Regionals?
I tell you what, I'm not going to lie to you, because I'm still blown up on baseball, but for one thing, ECU, of course, had my vote. They've had my vote the last few years, because Cliff Godwin, you guys have, I think it's safe to say, the best coach in the league. He's got a super regional under his belt, two regionals under his belt there with the Pirates. And I would say the next team that even comes close or has those, I say, aspirations because they invest in their program, like ECU, I would say Houston is probably the biggest threat for the Pirates this season.
Yeah, Houston's good, and we were talking about them just a minute ago. They're finally going to build a baseball stadium up in Connecticut. But UConn's head coach, you talk about the best coach of the league. Cliff won, but UConn's head coach is 1B, because that guy, what he's had to work with up there up until now, where they're finally building a stadium, they've been playing in a dump, and that program has been a winner consistently going back to the Big East days.
Yeah, he's a great coach, and for whatever reason, it evades me right now. I know that his brother was a head basketball coach at Houston a few years ago, and they just have coaching in their blood. So maybe that's why he's been able to overcome all those obstacles they have at UConn.
Dave, Bubba, you got anything else?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, as far as baseball is concerned, how many do you think there's – what would you say, maybe three bids, or how many bids do you think in the regional? Like, to make the
I said, well, we know this much. I'm going to say we're guaranteed to. Three would be nice. I'm eager to see what Cincinnati can do. I'm thinking Cincinnati could be a bit of a surprise this year, but I've said that in the past, and every time they've let me down. So I think okay. three is a pretty safe number with this league, at least.
Has okay. recruiting improved for Cincinnati baseball since you guys built your stadium a couple years ago?
The Mark Schott Stadium, they had, I believe they renovated it. Yeah, just a few years ago. I was down in Texas at the time, though.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been several years.
Oh, has it? Okay. For some reason, I thought it was recent. All right. That's my fault.
As far as the conference is concerned, one question I had for you before we let you go, Austin, what do you think about, we always on our podcast hate to use the term power league, we think that's a media-driven agenda, and also the group of five. Do you think that the American will ever be the power six? Like, we know the branding, and we think the commissioner's done a great job, but what do you think personally? Do you think it's going to stay group of five at the top of that, or will it make a power league?
I'll tell you what, it's tough to sit back and try to predict what's going to happen, but as you mentioned, Michael Resgo is doing a great job, and I think a lot of people have given him a bit of a hard time because they don't see him out there constantly talking about, us becoming a power conference, even though they're pushing the moniker of P6. But it's a bit hard for him to, handle negotiations and also keep the entire fan base up to speed on what's happening. I think he's doing a great job, and the league is doing a great job by pushing this Power Six idea. Because, as you mentioned, the label of Power Five and Group of Five are just concoctions by the media, primarily ESPN, of course.
Right.
And it's not something that really means anything. Technically, you have five autonomous conferences that are able to make some different rule changes for themselves. Now, I don't know where the original power thing came from, but the American is the only league from the so-called group of five that is in a position where it could actually make the move. But there's three things that have to happen. One, it has to get the right TV contract. Two, it has to get a bowl tie-in. And three, and this is just, it does sound a little weird, but it has to win a national championship in one of the three big sports in the next 5 years. That's baseball, men's basketball, and football.
All right, there you go.
we've done it in basketball.
That's right, UConn had 2014. But they have to get that bowl tie-in and TV contract primarily because when it comes to the power label, really all that is that those conferences have guaranteed slots for the so-called NY6 Bowl.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is goes back to money. I think the TV contract to me is the biggest piece of that puzzle. If you get the, if we could somehow get the TV contract $10 million or above our team, it's going to be a game changer because it separates us so clearly from the other so-called group of five and makes us really have more in common with the Power Five. I think there would be some real conversations at that point.
One good thing too that I failed to mention earlier, Austin, about that with ESPN. Thankfully, we have so many sports networks and all the digital platforms and with streaming that maybe somehow we could get that big a number. I'm hoping Kyle and I think both and Bubba cautiously optimistic, but that's the only thing that worries me is the cord cutting, but maybe with all the different options and competition, maybe that will give us closer to that $10 million mark.
It's possible. And one thing that we can at least rest assured in is that for the past few years, the American Athletic Conference and its staff has continued to look at and work with and directly talk to streaming platforms leading up to this potential situation where we may see the league start to be on streaming platforms.
Awesome. Well, Austin, appreciate your time.
Appreciate you very much and love to have you back on. And maybe we can have you back on during conference time for basketball.
Yeah, it was great talking to you guys, and especially, I was going to say, good luck to Chris Godwin and the ECU Pirates as they start this season.
All right. Thanks, Austin. Appreciate it, man.
We try really hard to cover all of ECU sports. There's 19 sports in all, and we try to do as much as we can. In fact, let's go now to Bubba with the ECU Sports Report. Take it away, Bubba.
I appreciate it, Dave. We'll start off this week's ECU Sports Report by taking a look at Pirate Baseball. The 11th-ranked Pirates swept their opening day doubleheader against Radford in front of more than 3,900 fans at Clark LeClaire Stadium. The Pirates won Game 1 6-2 before taking the nightcap 15-9 in a game that it led 13-3 after just two innings. The Pirates pounded out 29 hits, including four home runs in the twin bill. Sophomore Alec Burleson went 5-for-6 at the plate, while Bryson Worrell and Jake Washer also had four hit days. We'll take an in-depth look at the series with the Highlanders on Sunday in the debut of Extra Innings, our weekly baseball recap show. Women's basketball. The Pirates picked up their first road win of the season on Thursday night when Raven Johnson's 18 points led four ECU players in double figures, and it took down the SMU Mustangs 64-54 in Dallas. However, ECU slipped to 13-12 overall on Saturday when Houston used the strong fourth quarter to hand the Pirates a 63-52 defeat. The Pirates return to action on Wednesday night when USF comes to Minji's for a 7 p.m. tip-off. Softball. After going 4-1 on opening weekend in the Spartan Classic at USC Upstate, ECU softball continuing its winning ways in this weekend's Pirate Clash. The Pirates produce a pair of thrilling walk-off wins on Friday. In Game 1, Courtney Oliver's club trailed Wagner 6-2 in the bottom of the 7th, but plated 5 runs in the frame, the last 3 on a game-winning bases-clearing triple by pinch hitter Pearson Yacht. In Game 2, the Pirates relinquished a 5-run lead in the top of the 7th, but Tyler King drove in the game's winning run in the 8th inning, and the Pirates posted a 9-8 extra-inning win. ECU moved to 7-1 on Saturday night with a 7-5 victory over St. Francis. Rachel McCollum's grand slam in the bottom of the 3rd broke a 3-3 tie, and ECU won its 4th straight. McCollum, the Campbell transfer, also produced a run-scoring double. Ashley Anai is 5-for-10 on the weekend, while Logan Wood and Tate McClellan have mustered home runs. Sophomore righty Aaron Pepping is now 6-0 in the circle. Women's tennis. The Pirates remain red hot as they won their 4th straight match as they defeated Campbell 7-0 on Saturday afternoon at the ECU Indoor Tennis Facility. The 4 p.m. match against Winston-Salem State was postponed. The ladies return to action on Friday when Coastal Carolina visits Greenville for a noon match at the River Birch Tennis Complex. Women's lacrosse. Amanda Barnes Club matched their 2018 win total on opening weekend with home victories over Winthrop and Gardner-Webb. The Pirates return to action today at noon when they take on number 3 North Carolina in Chapel Hill. Women's golf. Kevin Williams Club had a strong showing in the Lady Puerto Rico Classic at the Rio Mar Country Club last week. The Pirates finished 5th in the 14-team field and ahead of 6 top 50 teams, including TCU, Purdue, Georgia, Iowa State, and NC State. Dortea Forbridge finished tied for 1st at 7-under par and was one of only 3 players in the field to finish under par. Men's golf. The Pirates begin competing in the Puerto Rico Classic on Sunday. The 3-day event is being hosted by Purdue University. Men's tennis. The Pirates improved to 9-1 on Saturday with a 7-0 win at Boston University and are playing at Bryant University this morning in a match starting at 9:30 a.m. Well, Dave, that does it for me. Back to you.
Thank you very much, Bubba. Great job on the ECU Sports Report. As you see, we actually cover all the sports as much as we can. I appreciate you, Bubba, very much for that. And the Pirates softball looking great. All our sports are looking great right now. So very excited about that. And, of course, the big game's coming up today as we get ready for that as well. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, Dave, just want to remind everybody again to check out the Sports Objective Extra Innings as we look back at the week that was in Pirate Baseball and look ahead as the week that will be. Everybody needs to listen to that again. We'll try to have it out Sunday night. If not, it'll be out Monday. Also want to thank Kelly Hines of the Tulsa World for joining us to talk about the Tulsa Golden Hurricane basketball team, and Coach Gilmore from Coastal Carolina. The Chanticleers have a great program. National championship winners from a couple years ago, and they've been where we strive to go, guys. They've been to Omaha, and they all won the whole damn thing. So that's where we want to get to. And Gilmore's done a great job at Coastal, been down there a long time. He's an alumni, much like Coach Godwin is here, and what Coach Gilmore has done at Coastal, Coach Godwin will hopefully do here. And I also want to thank C. Austin Cox, the host of the ACC Daily, the AAC Daily podcast, to talk a little American with us. So thank him for coming on, and check out his podcast. Guys, hopefully we'll be talking about two Pirate wins over Tulsa and over Radford Sunday night.
As always, thank you to our listeners. January was an excellent month on the Sports Objective. We had just shy of 4,000 listens. But thanks to you, we're on our way to blowing that total out of the water in the month of February. Content headed your way or things that we already have out there. If you're a racing fan, of course, you know the Daytona 500 is taking place this afternoon. Prior to race time, give our Daytona 500 preview show a listen. And we caught up with former Pirate linebacker Jeff Carr and got a behind-the-scenes perspective at NASCAR's Super Bowl. As I mentioned earlier in the show, we'll debut our weekly program, Extra Innings, with the Sports Objective later tonight as we'll take a look back at ECU Baseball's season opening series with the Radford Highlanders. Last but certainly not least, I want to encourage Pirate Nation to get out to Minji's this afternoon as ECU will host its annual Autism Awareness Game at 2 p.m. against Tulsa inside Williams Arena at Minji's Coliseum. Coaches will be wearing Autism Speaks blue puzzle piece pins, while the Pirates will be wearing custom design puzzle piece uniforms. The ECU SGA will be passing out specially designed Autism t-shirts to ECU students. Those shirts are available in Dowdy student stores.
Very excited tonight, folks. Once again, make sure that you listen for Extra Innings on the Sports Objective as we give you our weekly recap of all the games for baseball. This, of course, the opening weekend. So we'll be talking about the three Radford games. We'll have special guests. Plus, we'll do lots of great things coming up. And you may even hear some live podcasts for Extra Innings where we give you the fans and we'll have live guests, much more. And that'll be coming up as the season goes on in a few weeks. We'll have that for you. Speaking of live podcasts, April the 13th for the spring game, we can go ahead and tell you we'll be doing a special one live from Greenville. We're working on that right now. Lots of other live podcasts all throughout the year. So make sure that you know the Extra Innings is coming up tonight, and that'll be later on this evening. So make sure that you will record that, and then we'll put it out as fast as we can tonight for you. Wherever you listen to the podcast, be on the lookout for that. Also want to remind you folks that you can, on social media, you can like our Facebook page. We got a lot of people doing that. Thank you very much. You can follow us on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, at The Sports Objective on Instagram. We're on all, everywhere. Tumblr, all the great places, plus LinkedIn. If you're LinkedIn, then certainly we have one there as well. Appreciate you very much. And by the way, if you like the podcast, if you don't like the podcast, still give us a be nice and give us a 5-star review. It helps us out wherever you listen to your favorite podcast on Apple. I know in Stitcher, a lot of different places have where you can rate the podcast, and that helps us out a lot. All right, for our great guest today, for Kelly Hines, C. Austin Cox, Gary Gilmore, Kyle from LaGrange, Barber, and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.